Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll look into a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with today's announcement by the Secretary of Defence outlining proposed cuts in the military budget that are in fact not cuts at all. William Hartung, the Director of the Arms and Security Program at the New America Foundation and author of Prophets of War, Lockheed Martin and the Making of the Military-Industrial Complex, joins us to examine the numbers game and the astronomically expensive and useless weapons programs that are not being cut. Then we'll get an update on the Florida Republican primary as Gingrich and Romney do battle in a debate tonight to win the Latino vote they are trashing each other's record over. Joining us is Luis Martinez Fernandez, a historian of Latin America and the Caribbean at the University of Central Florida. He was born in Cuba, graduated from a Puerto Rican university, and currently teaches in Orlando, Florida. We will discuss the first Latino vote in Florida and the Cuban-American vote the candidates are fighting over. Then finally, a 23-year veteran of the CIA's clandestine service who's retired in 2007 as Deputy National Intelligence Officer for Transnational Threats, Glenn Carl, joins us in the studio. We will discuss the recent arrest of an ex-CIA officer for espionage and the legacy of torture that haunts the CIA and caused Glenn Carl to resign from the CIA because he could not fulfill his oath to preserve and to protect the Constitution. He is the author of the new book, The Interrogator, and education. I'm now joined by William Hartung, who is the director of the Arms and Security Initiative at the New America Foundation. His books include How Much Are You Making on the War Daddy, A Quick and Dirty Guide to War Profiteering in the Bush Administration, Lessons from Iraq, Avoiding the Next War, and Prophets of War, that's prophets in the religious sense, Lockheed Martin, and The Making of the Military-Industrial Complex. Welcome to Background Briefing, William Hartung.
Yes, good to be back.
And today, Secretary of Defense Leon Panetta announced his first cuts in the 10-year, $487 billion reduction in Pentagon spending. But it's not really a reduction, is it?
No. I mean, basically, it's a reduction in the sense that the Pentagon wanted much, much more than they're getting now, and now they're having to give some of that back. But compared to current spending, it's going to go up about 7%, and even if you adjust for inflation over 5 years, down a percentage point or so. So given that we've been at record levels, it's really, you could barely call it an adjustment, much less a cut, I would say.
And specifically, they're talking about cutting the Army by 490,000 and the Marine Corps to 182,000. And they're going to have a new round of base closures and slow down the production of the F-35 fighter. Not cancel it or reduce it, but slow it down. What exactly are they saying?
Well, you know, they're mostly working at the margins. I mean, the cuts in the Marines and the Army will put us back where we were before 9/11, because there was a buildup in conjunction with the wars. And they're going to take 5 years to do it at a time when the Iraq War has been wound down. They're claiming they'll be out of Afghanistan. So it's, it's more of a kind of a managerial tweaking than a major policy change. Secretary Panetta was very clear. They want the F-35, it's the plane of the future, but they also acknowledge that it's having cost and performance problems, and they want to, one of the generals said they're having manufacturability problems, which is the first time I had heard that word. They're really slowing it down to see if they can get the cost under control, but there's, they're fully committed to the program.
And this is a program that by any reasonable measure is the greatest boondoggle, the most obscene waste of money, and the most useless weapon system probably that this gold-plated pork barrel Pentagon's ever come up with.
I wish I had put it that way myself. I think, first of all, the program as a whole would be the largest program in the history of the Pentagon, because they want to build 2,400 of these things, and also allies in the UK and Australia, and now Japan wants to buy them. There'll be another 9 or 10 countries in on the deal. And yet it's, cost twice what they promised initially so far. It can't meet many of its performance objectives. And it's not clear what the mission is. I mean, basically, they seem to be doubling down on this idea that the United States needs to be prepared to contain China. But it's hard to imagine the United States having aerial dogfights with Chinese fighter planes. So even that argument seems a little bit off. So I think you're right. It's mostly pork barrel. It's to keep Lockheed Martin happy and keep the defense industry kind of, you know, humming along at a high enough rate that, you know, if they want to build up even further down the road, they'll have all these parts in place.
But the plane really couldn't get in a dogfight. It's the stupidest thing where they've decided to build an airplane that is both a fighter, a ground attack, and a bomber, all in one. And it does none of them well. And they've concentrated on this stealth technology, which countermeasures have been developed in Russia and China to defeat. And stealth makes the thing useless for all of the above. But had they gone ahead and made updated the fighters that they have, the A-10 that they have, and basically bought cheaper versions of all three planes for all three missions, they'd save trillions.
Well, yes. You know, my colleague Winslow Wheeler at the Center for Defense Information and Pierre Spray, who was involved in some of the design decisions on the A-10, the F-16, have been very persuasive on this point. You know, it's sort of like this thing is supposed to do all things and does none of them well. In fact, is you know, as you suggest, does them worse than the prior generation. But I think there's this kind of gung-ho you know, fascination with the idea that this is going to be a fifth-generation fighter and it's going to do all these amazing things. And, you know, much of that is just wishful thinking.
But it's already killing its own pilots. They lost one up in Alaska recently, and they had to ground the entire fleet because of the oxygen supply to the pilot. Now, supplying oxygen to a pilot is not a sophisticated piece of technology.
No. I mean, it's really, it's very hard to explain other than in the kind of terms of needing to, you know, wanting to spend more money.
Well, again, I'm speaking with William Hartung, who is the director of the Arms and Security Initiative at the New America Foundation, and he's the author of the new book, Prophets of War. That's prophets in the religious sense. Prophets of War, Lockheed Martin and the Making of the Military-Industrial Complex. And Lockheed Martin, of course, announced its fourth quarter profits today, and this doesn't seem to be affecting their stock at all. The idea that maybe, what was the word that they used with the F-35? Remanufacturing or something?
Oh, well, that they're having manufacturability problems.
A manufacturability problem.
And they can't build one that works, you know.
In spite of that, you know, and of course, Newt Gingrich was the representative in the Congress for Martin Marietta, and he's running for president. And your book basically makes out that these people are the ones that really are making out. They're the ones that are shaping the defense budget. We cut the boys, but we don't cut the toys.
Well, exactly. And, you know, not only is Gingrich an old friend of Lockheed Martin, but, of course, Mitt Romney wants to spend, you know, about $1 trillion more over the next decade than what Obama would spend. So the industry would, you know, welcome him with open arms were he to, forbid thought when the election become the next president.
So what about this sequestration that we had heard so much about that would automatically cut another $500 billion over and above the $487 billion that the defense secretary was talking about today? Nobody thinks that's ever going to happen, right?
I don't think so. I mean, there's already John McCain has a version of a bill to roll it back. Buck McKeon and the House Republicans have their version of the bill. Panetta and the industry are screaming that it would, you know, hollow out our force and devastate our ability to defend ourselves for years to come. And I guess most importantly, it doesn't kick in until January 2013. So the most likely thing is there'll be a lot of political jousting this year, and then whoever wins the election will, you know, decide what to do in that period between November and January 2013. So it's mostly going to be a kind of a political football this year, although it will, you know, the nature of that debate may affect what can really be done later.
So a couple of the things that Panetta announced today, which I find very puzzling, is that he announced that the Pentagon will be funding the next generation bomber and the Navy will invest in a new design of its Virginia-class submarine. Now, my understanding, and that's the attack submarine, right? The Virginia.
Yes.
My understanding is that there's an extraordinary surplus of submarines with the end of the Cold War. All of those missile platforms, the Tridents and others, basically have been converted into intelligence platforms because there's no reason to have thousands of missiles pointed at the Soviet Union. So why in God's name do they need more submarines?
Well, the Navy talked about, late last year, it's sort of like you need to build them so you can keep building them. You know, they said, well, if we keep up a rate of a couple attack submarines a year, then when we want to build a new ballistic missile submarine, we'll have the facilities and skilled people available. So it's sort of like without asking who are these submarines going to attack and who are these missiles going to be targeted at, it's just kind of this bureaucracy that keeps going and going on its own steam.
So the only announcements of any cuts in terms of weapon systems are the retiring of 65 C-130s, which have all been replaced by the C-17, which in itself, its production line was extended far beyond anything the Pentagon wanted.
Well, yes. Boeing and its allies in Congress, year after year, managed to put in another 10 here, another 10 there. And the Pentagon, it took them quite a while to wind that down. It has happened with the F-22, where they had to fight tooth and nail to cut it off at a round where they had hoped to, instead of doubling it like Lockheed Martin and the Air Force had hoped to do.
And the Navy's going to keep its 11 carriers, the carriers, of course, with their task force around them, and the 10 air wings will also be kept. So, apart from the modest reductions in Army ground forces and Marine Corps ground forces and taking and retiring these obsolete C-130s, anything else that I'm struggling here to find out whether this is a real cut or just a cosmetic shuffling?
Well, I would lean towards cosmetic shuffling. The other thing that they've talked about is they want to play around with pay and benefits. And the way they're arguing is, well, we're not going to affect people currently in the force, but for the future, we'll institute co-pays, higher premiums for the health care, we'll slow the rate of pay increases. And, that's a hard sell, given the strength of the Navy League and the Air Force Association and the Retired Officers Association and so forth. And so they're kind of being careful about it, trying to make the case, well, it's not going to affect you, it's going to affect people coming later. It's sort of like when a manufacturer wants to bust the union, and so they try to just keep the new recruits from joining and kind of age out the union. This is, they're just trying to age out the people that get the current level of benefits and sort of bring in people at lower levels who join going forward.
Again, I'm speaking with William Hartung, who is the director of the Arms and Security Initiative at the New America Foundation and the author of Prophets of War, Lockheed Martin and the Making of the Military-Industrial Complex. So given that the president recently said the tide of war is receding and they appear to be getting out of Afghanistan, they've already gotten out of Iraq, notwithstanding there's a kind of the U.S. and Iran seem to be on a collision. A war there could possibly be precipitated by the Israelis. But if you take the president and his word that they don't want to do any more of these boots-on-the-ground disasters in the Middle East and they're looking more towards the Pacific, first of all, in terms of the wars that the U.S. has been involved in and even the operation in Somalia yesterday, the impression that you get is that we don't need these huge military forces going into hostile territory and turning the local population against the United States by their very presence, that the special forces are the people that are going to be used in the future. So is there anything in this budget that indicates that they're going to be boosting the special forces?
Yes. They didn't give numbers today, but they're certainly going to increase the budget. Their main constraint is, it takes a while to train somebody to do that kind of thing. So they're hoping to increase. They're at about 60,000 now, less than, around 5-10% of the total military. And they'd like to add, 2,000 or 3,000 people a year. So given all the places they seem to want to use them, and this, Panetta implied this in his little talk that, if we're not as involved in Afghanistan, it'll free up the special forces to operate in other parts of the world. So I think they're going to, put them on a pretty heavy schedule of training here, intervening there. Some openly, some secretive. And so I think that'll be, along with the drone strikes and so forth, the most heavily utilized part of the force.
So even if the tide of war is receding, that doesn't mean that the U.S. is not going to be more and more involved in these little covert wars, right?
Well, in terms of the numbers of wars, could certainly go up. It's just none of them will be involving hundreds of thousands of troops. And you know, some of the rhetoric sort of betrayed that. They talked about we can go anywhere, we can fight any adversary, we can win at any time, and how they're going to use innovative methods to be continue to be involved in Latin America and Africa, rotating troops, special forces. They didn't mention, but probably will include CIA operations, drone strikes, putting you know, temporary bases in places like, well, you know, Marines in Australia, naval forces in the Philippines and Singapore. So it's really, you know, they are in that sense trying to take advantage of the winding down of those two wars to be able to operate in more places.
Well, just in closing, William Hartung, you wrote Prophets of War, Prophets, P-R-O-P-H-E-T-S, Lockheed Martin and the Making of the Military-Industrial Complex, which really does give you a window into what really drives the defense budget and what is the most expensive, and the F-35 that we talked about is the most expensive weapon system in the history of man, and it is also one of the most troubled, and it's just mind-boggling to try and figure out why it is, if you have to cut the defense budget, why can't we cut something that is so manifestly a failure and a waste of money? And you'd think that the other people that need the money within the defense department, and we've been told for decades now that the fighting between the services in the Pentagon is almost as vicious as it is against any so-called enemy. You'd think that all the other services would be making the case that we need stuff for the 21st century threats, not worthless gold-plated turkeys for fighting the Cold War.
Well, I think quietly the Army's been saying that, and you know, certainly uniform members of the Army have that opinion, but of course they're not encouraged to express it. You know, I think if the administration really pushed down the top line of the budget, then you would see some of these inter-service rivalries. You'd see companies kind of competing rather than collaborating. You'd actually have almost like a divide-and-conquer strategy against the military-industrial complex. But if you're going to make such modest adjustments, everybody still feels they can get a, if not the, you know, the huge piece of pie that they were hoping for, a very substantial piece of pie out of the current plans.
So you think it's time for a teachable moment from the president, but I imagine the reason he's not doing it is that Lockheed Martin is one of the biggest lobbyists on Capitol Hill, right? And they probably have as many Democrats in their pockets as they do Republicans.
Very much so. You know, they have now about 1,000 lobbyists for the whole defense industry. Lockheed Martin has, you know, it's good 80, 100 or so. A lot of them worked in former Democratic administrations, for former Democratic members of Congress. Patty Murray, who co-chaired the super committee, had the largest number of former staffers going into lobbying for the industry. So, and she, of course, heads the Democratic Central Campaign Committee. So they are very much entrenched in both parties. And I think also, you know, just in terms of short-term political thinking, you know, I think Obama is, he doesn't want to pick a bigger fight than he's already going to have with the Buck McKeons of the world, who are so deep into the pockets of the arms industry that you can, you know, you can barely find them. So, you know, I think there is a short-term political calculation on his part, is that if he does something modest and he's criticized, you know, from the left as well as from the right, he can say, well, I guess I'm doing the right thing then, you know, kind of a not too big, not too small approach to policymaking.
Well, I thank you for joining us here today, William Hartung.
Yes, thanks a lot.
Again, I've been speaking with William Hartung, who is the director of the Arms and Security Initiative at the New America Foundation. His books include How Much Are You Making on the War Daddy, A Quick and Dirty Guide to War Profiteering in the Bush Administration, Lessons from Iraq, Avoiding the Next War, and Prophets in the Religious Sense, Prophets of War, Lockheed Martin, and the making of the military-industrial complex. We're going to take a brief station break and be back talking about Mitt Romney and Newt Gingrich beating each other up to get the Latino vote in Florida.
Come, you masters of war, you that build the big guns, you that build the death planes, you that build all the bombs, you that hide behind walls, you that hide behind discs. I just don't want.